Welcome to the Digital Story Show, new tools for the creative mind. The Digital Story Show takes you inside with tips for the creative pursuit of photography, music, video, hardware, software, techniques, and hacks. You'll soon find yourself thinking less about buttons and menus and more about expressing the artist inside us all. Now the Digital Story Show with Derek Story.
December 5th, 2006, the Digital Story Show with Derek Story. Today's topic, capture. So I've had these thoughts bouncing around in my head lately, both privately when I'm talking with photographer friends, and publicly when I'm speaking at user group meetings, trade shows, colleges, you know, all these different venues. And all of these thoughts at first felt sort of loosely related until just the other day, until just Saturday, when I was speaking at Napa Valley College, and I was there to talk about output. It was an advanced photography class, and I was a guest lecturer there, and they really wanted me to talk about output, specifically things like iPhoto books and portfolio pieces and things like that. And the thing that dawned on me as I was getting ready to talk was that I really couldn't talk about output without talking about capture. I really felt the need to talk about capture before I got to the output, and that's exactly what I did, and it was very interesting how that all played out. Okay, put a bookmark there for just a second. Now, at the same time that this thing that happened at Napa Valley College has been going on in my head, some other things have been happening too. And one of them is that I've had this need to pull out old cameras lately. I don't know, do you ever get into that sort of mood where you want to pull out your old film cameras or some of your early digital cameras and shoot with them to see, you know, how well they perform, you know, and wow, could I use this camera? And one of the cameras that I pulled out was an Olympus C5050. Which I have to tell you is one of the most attractive cameras I've ever purchased. I just love the way this thing looks. It has a fast f1.8 zoom lens. It holds three different types of media, compact flash, XD picture card, and smart media, probably one of the last modern cameras to use smart media. It has all these manual controls. It has a hot shoe for flash, and I remember it having lots of good JPEG modes and a TIFF mode, but I had forgotten that it had a RAW mode. Now, this is a camera that I believe came out or became popular in early 2003, so it's been around for a while now. I hadn't shot with it for a while, and I had forgotten that it had a RAW mode, a 5-megapixel camera. So I got all excited. I go, wow, you know, I just love this camera. It has RAW mode. I wonder if any of my applications can read its RAW files. And if so, maybe this is a camera that I can, like, throw in my backpack when I go for a bike ride or something, you know, just for casual use. But I'll still have RAW capability with me instead of, you know, having to choose between the super compact and maybe a DSLR. So I started taking some pictures with it and making some prints. And I tested some other older cameras too. A Canon G2, which is has been another one of my favorite cameras. That also has RAW mode. It's a 4-megapixel camera. And then also I broke out some film cameras. And in fact, I even sent a film camera that had a little bit of a noise that I didn't like into the service shop. I have a Contax RX body, and I don't know how many of you are Contax fans out there. You know, Kyocera isn't making Contax cameras anymore as of last year, which I think is a real shame because they're just absolutely beautiful cameras. But I have an RX, which is a manual focus camera. It uses Zeiss lenses, and I have 7 Zeiss lenses for this camera. And they are, every one of them are just gorgeous. All of them prime lenses. So, and they're manual focus, but what the RX has, it has a focus assist readout in the viewfinder. So as you're focusing, it electronically tells you when you're in focus or not in a very easy to use, intelligent way. It's just fabulous. So even if you're, you know, going, you know, your eyesight isn't what it used to be and you're not as confident with a manual focus only camera, this camera really is as easy to use as autofocus in so many ways. Plus, it has a really bright, crisp, contrasty viewfinder, which makes focusing even easier. And then, of course, you have all these wonderful Zeiss lenses on there, which, you know, you just, is there any way I could put a digital back on this camera? I'd be, you know, so happy. So anyway, I've become fascinated with the film cameras, too. I also pulled out my Hasselblad 500C, which I have a Polaroid back for, and then two film backs. And again, I have two really nice lenses for that camera, my favorite being the 150mm f4, I believe, portrait lens for the Hasselblad. Just a fabulous, it's a legendary lens. I have a black one, and it's just gorgeous. So I've been fascinated with the film cameras, thinking, is there a way that I can bring film cameras, you know, sort of back into my photography workflow? I have all this stuff bouncing around in my head, you know, the film cameras on one hand, the old digital cameras on the other hand, my obsession with talking about capture when I'm talking about digital photography, regardless of what I'm supposed to be there to talk about. All this stuff is bouncing around in my head, and I sort of attribute it to this sort of year-end, you know, just kind of taking account of photography as it stands for me right now. And at first it was sort of bothersome because I really couldn't connect all the dots. And then, as I said on Saturday when I was speaking at Napa Valley College, I think all the dots came together. And I, not only did it help me, but I thought, wow, you know, this is something that I think will be an interesting show. So I'm going to continue with that in just a second. I thought before I get on to connecting those dots, and so you understand why the heck I'm labeling the show Capture, I thought I would do a little virtual camera club business and then get back to the business of connecting dots. First thing to talk about is photo assignment. The November photo assignment is closed, and I'll be hoping to get that gallery up real soon. I should have it posted within the next few days. Any luck at all? I have some traveling. I have to go to the East Coast in the middle, actually tomorrow. I have some traveling to do and so forth, but I'll get to it as quickly as possible. And that was, of course, Juxtaposition. And I think you're really going to like this gallery. It's a very interesting gallery and sort of lives up to everything that I hoped it would be. So I'll keep you posted on the site, but like I said, I should have that gallery up real soon, and I think you'll enjoy it. Now, we need to start on a new photo assignment for December, and I have an interesting theme. It's called Pool of Light. Photo assignment for December is Pool of Light. Now, I came across this idea, actually, the other day, when I was looking at some of Steve Simon's photos. Now, Steve Simon is a photographer who's done 4 books, I believe. He's a blogger on the Inside Aperture site. And he's someone that I got to meet a while back. In fact, we did a podcast interview with him. And I was looking at some of his photos from the AIDS Project in Africa. And he was shooting them existing light. And I really like the way he handled exposure. And the thing that he would look for in some of his shots is the room would be, you know, kind of the lighting would be subdued. And then there'd be, you know, this pool of light either coming in from a window or some opening illuminating an area. And there would be the main subject of the photo. And I just love this look. I thought it looked so great. And I see wedding photographers who like to shoot existing light primarily use this technique a lot. They won't really take a shot until the bride or the groom or someone important actually moves over and stands in a pool of light. And then they'll, you know, expose for that person and let everything else in the more subdued lighting go its own way. And I think it's a fascinating technique, and I think it would make a great photo assignment. So the assignment for December is Pool of Light. Now, what I gave you right now is just one interpretation of pool of light. And I was just citing those examples because that's where I got the idea. But obviously, there are many different directions you can take this, and I want you to feel free to do so. So pool of light, you make the interpretation. There's all sorts of ways to go with this. I gave you a few hints, and I think it will stack up to be another terrific photo assignment. I would start working on it pretty soon, though, and start looking for those pools of light where you can record something really fascinating and share it with the rest of us at The Digital Story. I want to remind you about grab shots also. They've been actually a little light lately. The flow of grab shots has slowed down a bit. The ones that have come in have been quite good, though, and I've really enjoyed running them. But I would say that there's a bit of a window of opportunity. If you have a grab shot, if you're sitting on a grab shot, I think now would be a good time to send it in, and chances are I could get it published fairly quickly. So keep those grab shots in mind, and if you're sitting in one, send it all in. And remember, both for photo assignment and grab shots, all you have to do is go to the submissions page of The Digital Story. That's thedigitalstory.com, and there'll be all the info there that you need to know. I want to give a quick shout out to both of our sponsors, both Fotomagico, and that's at FOTOMAGICO.com. And they make, of course, the most outstanding slide software that you could ever hope to find. And by the way, recently, with the latest version of Fotomagico, which is a 1.8, that you can actually pull in images from your Aperture library now, too, as well as your iPhoto library. Very slick. It's a free download for registered users. And, of course, you can try it out. If you're not a Fotomagico user, you can try out the demo version, which is fully functional, and give it a whirl. So now you can have access in Fotomagico to both your Aperture and your iPhoto libraries, which gives you lots of good imagery to build these fantastic slideshows. And I also want to give a happy shout out to ExpoDisc, and they make this fantastic accessory for getting absolutely accurate color balance readings using your custom white balance setting on your camera. And you can find out more about ExpoDisc at ExpoDisc, ExpoDisc.com. Thanks to both of our sponsors. They really help keep this Digital Story boat afloat. Okay, now let's see here. I think that will take care of the basic business. I probably have one or two other things I might cover at the end, but I wanted to get the photo assignment up front because sometimes people, they just want to know what the photo assignment is and they don't really care about my rambling on about digital photography. That's probably not the case, but I just thought I'd get it up front anyway. Okay, back to capture. So the thing that really dawned on me, this really came to me on Saturday, is that I had been saying for some time now, and I would say over the course of this last year, that our capture devices are so good now, we don't really have to depend on Photoshop the way we used to in order to produce good digital images. And, you know, I was basing this on the fact that in the earlier days of digital photography and with the earlier digital cameras that I used, that they weren't photographic, in my opinion, in terms of the sort of image that they originally presented you, and that I would have to massage those images in Photoshop, especially things like landscapes and serious portraiture work, things like that. I'd have to massage those images in Photoshop to kind of get that photographic look that I really wanted. And so Photoshop had become a necessary part of the equation. And consequently, because I couldn't really capture the image the way that I wanted it in the first place, I began to, for a period of time, probably not pay as much attention when I was shooting digitally to my capture technique as I was when I shot with film. And when I shoot with film, I'm very persnickety about how I capture my images, making sure that exposure and depth of field and color balance are all the way that I want them. because, you know, quite honestly, it's much more difficult to correct those things after you've made the exposure than it is before you make the exposure. So I had actually become a little lax in my digital capture technique. So then I really noticed with the latest round of cameras that I'm using, which is I'm using a Digital Rebel XT, not the latest one, the XTi, which I hear is a very good camera, but the XT. I think that's the 350D for a lot of you. And then a Canon 5D is my high-end digital SLR, and that's a 12-megapixel camera. Fabulous camera. Fabulous. Very good camera. And then a Canon PowerShot SD700i image stabilizer camera, which I just have been using starting this summer. I originally got it because I needed a new compact camera, and also because I could get an underwater housing for it. And as you know, I was doing a lot of snorkeling work over the late summer and fall, and had a lot of fun putting that camera in housing. So those are my three primary digital capture devices right now. On the post-production side, I pretty much narrowed down to three applications. Obviously, I still use Photoshop as needed, although I'm not using it nearly as much as I used to. And then I'm using the beta version of Adobe Lightroom, and I'm using Aperture 1.5. And Aperture and Lightroom, to me, sort of represent a new breed of digital photography applications, because not only do they allow you to do some image editing, you know, color correction and exposure correction and so forth, but you can do everything else. You do your keywording, you do your rating, you can set up your prints for output to slideshows, to web pages, to printing, obviously. I mean, it is a total digital photography environment. Each of them are. Now, what's interesting about both Lightroom and Aperture is that if you shoot well, you can really tear through the post-production process. And this is especially helpful for big shoots like weddings and big sporting events and things like this where you have 400, 500, 600, 800 frames that you have to cull quickly, get to the best shots, do any image correction that you may have to do on your best shots, and then move them along to the next stop, whether it be the client or your editor or whomever it happens to be. So these applications really are fabulous when you have these gigantic shoots with lots of pictures. Now, what else, though, and this is where we get back to capture, what else is really helpful when you're working in this environment is to capture your images well. In other words, make good exposures and make good white balance adjustments. And these are the two very critical areas in capture to me. Obviously, things like focus and composition are important. And, that's true regardless of, you know, what you're doing. You know, regardless of what kind of camera, you know, what medium, whatever. Your shot's got to be in focus, right? And you've got to have, you know, a good eye. You have to have good composition. And your pictures have to tell a story. All of that stuff is true no matter, you know, what you're working with. But when you're working with digital cameras these days, you really, I think, need to be very good about your exposure adjustments and making sure that you're getting good exposures at capture. And you need to think a little bit about the lighting that you're working in and set your white balance accordingly. And this is true whether you're shooting in JPEG or RAW, in my opinion. Now, I had someone ask me when I was speaking at Napa Valley College the other day, well, you know, if you're shooting RAW, since there's no penalty for changing your mind on the white balance setting, you know, why do you have to think about white balance when you're shooting RAW? And I said, well, you know, there's no penalty for the image, right? You know, so if you can change your mind and it doesn't hurt the image, there's no, you know, destructive, you know, effect on the image by changing your mind on the white balance. But there is a penalty to pay in terms of time. And if you have to go through and make a lot of adjustments on your images, then you're using your time, and that is a penalty. Time is a real thing, and time is especially a real thing when you have a whole bunch of frames that you have to tear through to deliver to a client or an editor or whoever it happens to be. The whole while that I'm talking about this, I keep hearing myself say, well, because cameras are so much better these days, and I'm thinking to myself afterwards, well, how much better are these cameras really? I mean, are my pictures looking better these days because I've gotten better as a photographer? Is my post-production better? Are my computer tools better? You know, maybe I'm attributing these better looking pictures to the capture devices without really, you know, testing that. So I thought, okay, I'd test it. And this gets back to my example with the Olympus. When I got all excited about the Olympus C5050, I put it in RAW mode. I put it at ISO 100. It goes down to 60, I believe. I put it at ISO 100. And I did some shots in lighting that had both highlights and shadows, and had linear stuff, and had tree twigs, had all sorts of stuff. So I basically shoot it under these conditions in RAW mode, using very good camera technique and so forth, 5 megapixel images. And I bring those images back to my computer. Now, Aputure can't read them. Aputure can't read those old Olympus RAW files. But Lightroom, one of the cool things about Adobe Lightroom is that it can read almost anything. And, of course, it could read these Olympus RAW files. So I uploaded them into Lightroom, and I actually played around with the images a little bit, which kind of goes against what I'm saying, generally speaking. But I wanted to give this camera every chance to prove itself. So I actually did some adjusting, and I did some calibration of the camera and so forth. And then I made 8.5 by 11 prints, or actually they're more A4 prints, because that's a paper I had, which is close to 8.5 by 11. So I made these A4 prints, and then compared them to prints that I had been making with both the Digital Rebel, which is an 8-megapixel camera, and my compact PowerShot SD700, which is a 7-megapixel camera. And just kind of spread them all out on the table. Now, I was amazed at how different the shots from the Olympus camera looked compared to the shots of the other two cameras. I mean, I had purple fringing. I had all sorts of artifacts. There was noise in the shadow area, even though I was only shooting at ISO 100. I had a variety of problems, and then the overall image just looked kind of, all of the prints. I made 5 different prints of 5 different shots, and they all just didn't quite look right. I mean, they didn't excite me. I didn't feel like they had that electricity that I've been getting from my other images lately. And especially when I put them side by side with prints of the same size made with, you know, my modern cameras, the cameras that I'm using right now. So I also tested the Canon G2, and I had a similar experience. I thought the prints were actually a little bit better from the G2 than the Olympus C5050. That could be my subjective eye there, because, you know, it wasn't a huge amount of difference. But again, they didn't have that electricity, and they certainly had things like a lot more purple fringing and more noise than even the JPEG shots from my SD700, my little compact camera. And these cameras are both, you know, about 3 to 4 years old, both the Olympus 5050 and the Canon, and these were expensive cameras. These were not cheap cameras. I think I paid around $700 for each of them, which was a lot of money. But, you know, then again, at the time, you know, I wanted to try to get the best cameras that I could. The bottom line was, after this afternoon of testing, this informal testing that I did and printing and everything, is that my modern cameras are better. I mean, they're a lot better. I'm not getting things like when I shoot tree branches that don't have leaves on them, I'm not getting purple fringing all over them with my current cameras like I was with cameras that are a few years old. I'm not getting, you know, all sorts of noise in lightly shadowed areas when I'm shooting it at ISO 100. I'm not getting, you know, sort of the coloration that's just wrong even when I do a custom white balance setting. I'm just not running into a lot of the problems these days that I had before. Not to mention I have a lot more resolution now than I had before, so I can make bigger prints or I can crop, or I just have more pixels to work with for whatever I want to do. So I feel very confident now saying that capture devices are definitely better now than they were 2, 3, 4 years ago. And I'm amazed by the pictures that my little compact PowerShot SD700 produces in JPEG mode. They're just phenomenal, and they print beautifully. And the stuff that I had a hard time getting before with a camera that could shoot in RAW and that I would actually fiddle with the shots afterwards in post-production. So now you capture, so now you couple these really good capture devices with this workflow that we have with Lightroom and Aperture and these other modern applications that allow you to just, you know, process a whole bunch of images quickly, and especially if you don't have to do image adjustment, especially if you're just moving them through, rating them, and picking out your best ones and then doing the output. Suddenly, you know, the ability to have great capture really helps you on the back end because you don't have to sit there and fiddle with the shots like you used to. You don't have to. Now, if you want to, you can, and that's your choice, but you don't have to anymore. And especially if you're good with exposure and especially if you're good with white balance, you can have these shots just fly through your computer in one end, out the other, and they look fabulous. They make fabulous prints. They make fabulous books. They make fabulous web pages. The slideshows in HD can be stunning. I mean, the stuff that you can do now without having to mess with the images in post-production, I think is phenomenal. And I think it really speaks to a time to getting back to being a good photographer. And this is where I came full circle. I now have had the revelation that I want to be just as careful when I'm shooting digitally as I am with film. In fact, in some ways, I want to be more careful because the payoff is so huge for having great capture and to have those images just fly through post-production. And I'm very excited about this because I feel like I have really great tools and I have the ability, I have the technique to use them properly. And now I have these great tools also in post-production that allow me to take this wonderful raw material and do very interesting things with it. And I can spend my time thinking about the creative side on output and not just trying to make a bland picture look better. Now, the only part I couldn't solve in all this is what to do with my film cameras that I love so much. And I tried everything. I was like thinking this theory, you know, using a film camera for backup, you know, like taking a film camera with you on a shoot and then, you know, shooting some film because, you know, you're protected against, you know, flash card failure and hard drive failure and all this. And that didn't work. And, you know, using film cameras to take pictures of your digital images and having them on film And I really couldn't come up with something that I would use and that I could advocate to other people. So I have my Select film cameras still, and I use some of them for professional shoots still. But I think for the most part, I'm going to keep my film cameras just because sometimes I want to shoot film and just because I really love these old cameras. And I can't really justify them outside of that because the digital capture these days is so good that it's hard for me to, you know, shoot a whole lot of film unless there's a specific reason to do so. So that's kind of what's been bouncing around in my head. I just think that the end of the year, it's a great time to be thinking about these sort of things. I think 2007 is going to be a really good time for all of us. I'm going to be covering everything that's happening in digital photography. I'll be curious to see what you think as you think about some of these issues about capture, about post-production, about output, about your cameras today compared to your cameras of a few years ago. And let me know what you think. Post a comment on the show notes or send me an email, and we might keep this conversation going. Regardless of how you do it, get out there and take some shots. We got a new photo assignment, Pool of Light. I'm really looking forward to see what you do with that. And I'll see you here next week. Goodbye now.
Your questions and comments, email them to questions@thedigitalstory.com. For show notes, weblogs, and informative articles, visit www.thedigitalstory.com. We'll see you next time on The Digital Story.